Hey, everybody, this is Raised in Wisco. We're going to be playing that song on every break because that song is called Megan's Muskie. Yes, AI is really something else.
That's Megan singing. What are you Megan talking about?
It's definitely not me singing. Megan's a songwriter and a singer.
Hey, whatever it takes. Here on Raised in Wisco, nothing would surprise me about our guests, our people on the panel, our frequent flyers, you name it. Megan the Salad Bar Salazar caught a massive muskie up north and made a song about it. So we're going to hear about
that. Andrew made a song.
Well, shout out to Andrew for Megan's muskie. My name is Joel Clayfish. I'm sitting alongside Danielle Fairman,
hello,
the hostess with the mostest, and the compatriani who joins me and puts up with all my bologna sausage on a regular basis. So thank you for that. The chefery of the show. Yes, I know. Speaking of food, no item of food ever gets past the chefery of the show. Ellie Lawton, the official chef, the award-winning French culinarian of Raised in Wisco, who helps us bring Field and Forage to the table every week, which is extremely exciting to me. And I am stuffed, by the way, because we started tonight with a feast before the show. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are new to Raised in Wisco, welcome. We are welcoming our guests and friends in Michigan, Minnesota, and those who can hear us in Illinois. And, of course, our Wisconsinites joining us on Raised in Wisco on all civic media stations throughout the state of Wisconsin, 25 in all. So you've got no excuse. And if you're listening to us live on Saturdays at 11 o'clock, you'll hear Megan's Muskie on the break. So that is pretty exciting. Megan, I'm going to forego your weekly Wisco and just, I want to hear about catching the fish that inspired the song.
Oh, catching the fish that inspired. So we all went up to our cabin near Hayward, so it's way, way, way up north. Decided to go musky fishing. We got a bait from Lake X Lures that they handed off to us. So we tried that out, and within an hour, we had a couple follows, and then I landed a 30-33-inch musky.
Yeah.
Yay.
Pretty cool.
I think that's definitely enough to inspire a song.
Oh, absolutely.
Fish of 10,000 casts, and I've only been twice, and that's my second muskie.
That was my first time musky fishing, like actual musky fishing, and I had a follow within the first like 3 minutes.
They're so cool to
watch.
It's
amazing.
However, I will say when it comes to hunting and fishing, Megan has a horseshoe up her hat.
Yeah, she does.
Once in a while. Sometimes.
And a shout out to your lover, Dave, who is here.
He's my fishing guide.
Going to stop being funny.
It is funny.
Oh my gosh, I'm getting Megan a t-shirt that says Dave's lover. And yes, Dave, you'll get one that says Megan's lover.
No, I think Dave should say my lover's guide.
All right.
The fact of the matter is, if you know Megan and Dave, they're quite inseparable, which is just fine because they're both perfectly pleasant people.
And they don't mind that I'm like their third wheel.
We love you.
Actually, you guys encourage it.
We do.
Megan's like, God, I need a break from Dave.
You guys
never says that, Dave.
You guys are just like an ATV in the 80s, three wheels. There you go. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Tonight on the show, we have a special guest who I've known for the better part of three decades myself. And this guy puts his money where his mouth is when he's in the outdoors. And he really gives it his all. And I'm psyched to talk to him tonight about the outdoors. But Eric Coggan, thank you for being here. Appreciate it very much. You're into some of the wacky stuff, though. I'm going to tell you. This guy shoots carp, okay? Yeah. Shoots carp, one of the most invasive species in Wisconsin that we've got to get under wraps. He shoots carp. And folks, if you don't know what to do with carp, I'm going to give a little recipe toward the end of
recipe?
My own. I'm going to give a little
carp?
Recipe for, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely delicious.
I'm intrigued.
I'm not joking. You know, in Europe, they consider it a delicacy. Mm. I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. And they make some of the best food in the world in Europe. So hang on for that. And because I've had some absolutely delicious food made from carp, but this guy's carp shoot. I mean, Eric, for goodness sake, you're literally shooting carp when I say carp shooting.
Yes, sir.
I want to know how a guy, first of all, gets into deciding I'm going to shoot carp.
Well, that's a pretty good story.
And I'm not talking, guys, I'm not talking like arrow, bow, like
bow fishing.
Bow fishing, carp only. This guy does it all.
Well, the guy sitting next to me over here is what caused it when we were 15 and 16 years old on Cushman Pond.
Well, we better introduce then. Jeb Verhaelen is with us as well. He's a recurring guest of the show. He's been here. He's been almost 2.5 years ago, which should tell you how long our show's been going. So take me through the inception of how you crazy guys became obsessed with carp.
I was 12 or so when I started doing it, and it was just out in the backwaters of the Castle Rock flowage and carp everywhere. And a few years later, Eric and I were buddies from high school, and I'm like, I don't know, got kind of nothing else to do, and it became a temporary little deal you could do at night, and we started doing it, and man, we ain't looked back for damn near 35 years. We've just been
and how many boats?
Nonstop.
And how many boats?
I think Eric's current boat is like boat number 9 or 10 overall for us.
Yeah, why do you? So they're boats. They're big aluminum boats.
Yeah.
With big floodlights on top. Are you guys mainly go night fishing, or do you do it during the day as well?
Oh, we've done it during the day, but it's mainly at night since they opened that up. It just makes it a little bit easier because you can see into the water and see the fish, and they can't see you as well during the day. They see you long before you see them. So the nighttime thing's kind of been the mainstay of it for the last 30 years.
Yeah, and how many boats for you?
I personally, I think I've done 5 or 6, and the other 5 or 6, Eric and I did either together or separate or vice versa. It's been a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
I could probably retire if I hadn't spent money on bow fishing. Let's put it that way.
Probably.
Yeah, so Eric, talk to me about what is the setup? How do you get started in this? And what's the allure of it? And I want to talk about one of the cool things about if you're bow fishing carp or if you're fishing carp, there's no season. You can I think this is one of the greatest things that you can really do when there's nothing to hunt or nothing to fish, and you're still doing great for conservation in Wisconsin mm-hmm. because you're getting some of these invasive species out of the lakes and waterways.
Well, it's a true combination between hunting and fishing at the same time. That's what was the biggest allure, especially the nighttime bull fishing. You're hunting fish with a bow and arrow and you're fishing. So it takes the hunting side of being able to hit something and combines it with knowing the water, reading the water, and finding the fish that you have to be able to see to be able to shoot them.
Yeah. And so when you first started doing it with Jeb, how did you guys start to learn about it? And where did you go from there when you're saying to yourselves, this is something we're going to do?
We just kind of learned it.
Because you start, how many years ago?
30 plus.
Yeah. 30 plus years ago, there were not many people bow fishing carp at that time.
So pretty much like trial and error for you guys. You just figured out your own kind of routine, what you were going to do and how it worked.
And right away, there was a guy named Matt Harris that took us to a Wisconsin Bow Fishing Association tournament. And then you combined a bunch of guys that played high school football really seriously to graduate in high school and
nothing to do.
Hunting, fishing, and competition all in one. And that was kind of the big draw for us.
So it became kind of a competitive sport. How do you shooting a bow at a fish is not the same as shooting a bow at a target or an animal on the ground, is it?
No, the deeper they are in the water, the lower you have to aim.
Explain that to me. What do you mean lower you have to aim?
Well, refraction. You know, when you put a straw in a glass and it looks like it's bent?
Yes.
The deeper the fish is in the water, the more below the fish you have to aim.
So it's a lot of trial and error with that. But they also have targets too, right? Mm-hmm. That you can drop down in the water and do for bow fishing?
It's mostly instinctive stuff.
Okay, because I remember when I went to Whale Tails, doesn't Whale Tails have a target you can drop down to practice? Because with the refraction for me, zero possibility of me getting it. The multiple, stop nodding your head, Jebediah. The multiple times that I have went out with Jeb, I have missed, I don't know, 50 times because the refraction gets you. When you shoot, when you aim for the fish dead on, let's say the fish is 2 feet in the water, and you want to aim what? Let's say like a foot below. But it doesn't make sense to me. It obviously makes sense because it's supposed to happen like that. But it when they're swimming and you got to aim below, because you're used to animals, you aim right for the heart, right behind the shoulder. With fish, you have to aim below them, below their belly button, and hopefully you get it. And it depends on the size. Like if you go for the gars, the carps, whatever else it can be, but you cannot shoot all fish.
No.
Right.
No, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, you also have to know your fish.
Yes, you definitely need to know
your fish. You have to know your fish species, and it's not like, you know, different bag limits for duck. If you shoot a duck, it's still in some bag limit. When you are fishing, bow fishing carp or gar or what are called rough fish in Wisconsin, you have to know that as well.
Well, that's interesting because I spearfish.
But
I underwater spearfish, so I don't bow fish.
And there are a whole set of rules for that as well.
Yep.
Now, holy cow, we got enough for like 16 shows right here. Megan, when you are underwater spearfishing, you're running scuba equipment?
Right.
And
I can't hold my breath that long.
Well, I don't know.
Megan's in scuba club.
I wish
club.
I could, but yeah, in scuba club.
And you go and you do that with Scuba, what's the guy's name? Scuba John?
Scuba Steve.
Scuba Steve. Shout out to Scuba
Steve.
There's no
Scuba Steve. There's no Steve. Okay.
Well, why?
Big Daddy, there's always Scuba Steve.
It's a joke.
Oh, okay. Oh. So are there different fish you can spear than you can shoot from a boat with a bow?
Yeah, because we can spear panfish.
You can spear panfish.
You can spear panfish and you can spear rough fish.
And so the difference in fish species sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Oh, such a conspiracy.
Goodness gracious.
I just started spearfishing in Wisconsin. I always spearfished in Florida before. So, and it's different because you can't tell. You have size limits in Florida, so you have to be able to tell the size of it. And everything looks bigger underwater.
If I'm in Florida, everything's getting a spear. Forget it.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I want to learn all about the species you can spear, the species you can shoot with a bow. We're going to talk about Asian carp. We've got Eric Coggan, Jebediah Verhalen, Megan Salazar, Danielle Fairman, Ellie Lawton, and I'm Joel Clayfish. This is Raised in Wisconsin. Every show, Raised in Wisco, is your one-stop shop for everything in the great outdoors of the great state of Wisconsin. My name's Joel Clayfish. Danielle Fairman is not my name, but that's your name.
It is my name.
That's not my name. Sorry.
Who sings that song?
I don't know, but we should all sing it.
Let's keep it that way.
Oh, ha-ha. Can you shut off his mic, Jacob?
Jacob, I think Joel.
Hey, the women are taking over, Jacob. That's fine.
Joel has used all of his words for the day.
I could use a break. Chef Ellie Lawton's along every week, helping us take Field and Forage to the table in a fast, easy, convenient, and always delicious way. We have a kind of fascinating panel tonight, the guys who are after the rough fish. Now, I want to talk about what a rough fish is. Compared to a regular fish, and we're going to get into all that, but I want to talk about weekly Wiscos first. Is everybody prepared for their weekly Wisco? Danielle?
Well, it was kind of a sad week last week.
Why?
Duck and goose was closed.
Oh, that's true. No, that is true.
But rabbit and pheasant did open.
Ah.
I did not go, though.
I did. I don't mind when waterfowl closes because then it forces me to get out there and either deer hunt or turkey hunt and not feel bad about it. Because one of the toughest things is when you're deer or turkey hunting and geese are flying over your head. That drives me bonkers.
Like, oh, I bet where they're, I know where they're going. My field.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So now when during the week that waterfall is closed, I actually don't feel guilty about hunting something else. So I like that. Chef Lawton, what was your weekly Wisco?
I was inspired by Kenya Lang's extreme hikes. So I went for a nice 1 mile hike.
1 mile.
No, it was longer than 1 mile. It was much longer.
It was definitely 1.5 miles through the Calmarain.
Yeah. It was a nice
downhill of the cattle. Yeah, I walked the trail in my backyard.
Don't fool yourself.
It was actually the horse. The horse. There was a point. Horseback riding.
I did pack snacks and water just in case.
There was a point at which you were at a 0.5% grade heading uphill. Two walking sticks.
No, it's we've had such beautiful fall weather, so I took advantage of it.
And if you folks did not hear the interview and the session with Kenya Link, go on to the podcast and listen to that. She had an incredible bighorn sheep hunt that was really humanly trying. And Danielle, if they don't listen to us live on Raised in Wisco on Saturdays at 11 on every civic media station throughout Wisconsin and some in Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois, where can they listen to the show?
You can just say, Alexa, play Raised in Wisco. It will take you to the civic media. Go to civicmedia.com and search for Raised in Wisco. Go to Facebook, where our wonderful Megan keeps updating everything with the wonderful recipes. And you can also listen to us on Spotify and Apple, not Pandora, Apple.
Apple, perfect.
Apple.
That's
apple picking season.
Apple, that's mouthful.
Delicious.
Megan, weekly
You took
whisk.
Mine away.
I took yours away. Oh, I'm sorry.
But I did have another one because
she's got one
well,
anyway.
Let's hear it,
I was in
for
a
goodness
bar.
Sake.
I was in a bar. And
wait a minute. Megan's weekly Wisco was I was in a bar. No, something that's not usual, Megan.
She's a Somali. She was doing research.
Yeah, research. No, I was getting the best roasted chicken in the entire state.
Whoa,
the
whoa.
That's easy. With authority.
Holy yeah, whoa. Cow.
Yeah.
Okay,
you're
well.
You're throwing
Chet and Emil's in Burnham Wood. Wisconsin.
Chet and Emil's.
And Chet and Emil's in Burnham Wood,
okay.
Wisconsin.
So if you are either Chet or Emil, get ready for barrage of customers.
Yes.
Because sommelier Megan Salad Bar Salazar is also quite the foodie. So if you take her advice and she says it's the best broasted chicken, I will
guarantee. You have to say it more aggressively.
It's damn good broasted chicken.
I have
it's
a
good.
Question.
Yeah.
What made it the best?
It's just delicious. I don't know. It's the oil and the way it's fried and the breading and everything.
Well, how
and
was the breading? Tell us the details.
Calm down. The important part is...
The chef wants to know the details.
I know.
I'm sorry I'm broasting over.
But the important part is that while we were there, it happened to be Youth Weekend. So this is more than a week ago. However, these two girls came in, twins, 9 years old. One got a 9-pointer, one got an 8-pointer.
Oh, yes. I saw
and
that.
And they were
wonderful.
So happy. And their brother didn't get anything, and he was really upset.
Oh,
and
no.
For the
next
rest
time
of
for
her
him.
Life, the one twin will say, I am better than you. My
no,
buck
both
had
twins
a
got
better
oh,
point.
One,
yeah,
extra
one
point.
Extra point.
One extra point.
Can we just talk about the fact that only in Wisconsin can we figure out a way to make fried chicken worse for you. If you do not know what broasting it is, it's frying chicken in oil in a pressure cooker. So it squeezes more fat into the chicken.
That's why it's so delicious.
Yes, chicken, the other...
It's the cholesterol cooker. Oh,
it's so delicious. I'm full and my mouth is watering. This happens all the time.
Sorry.
Oh, food is my favorite dish. All right. Well, my weekly Wisco, I'm very excited to say, was a pretty exciting pronghorn antelope hunt in Wyoming. My weekly Wisco is outside of Wisco. We allow that from time to time. And seeing another part of the country, I always say to folks, get outside of the box. Mm-hmm. Say yes. I had an opportunity to visit my good friend, Toby Johnson, out in Bighorn, Wyoming. And we shot three monsters with State Senator Rob Stafschult and his daughter. And I completed my Miriam Grand Slam for turkeys.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
that's
congrats.
So exciting.
I am really excited. Am I going to give away the recipe if I talk about what I did with my antelope as soon as we got back?
No.
No, I'm not. Okay.
No.
We got a different recipe today, but I want to say before the show, I roasted my antelope in a pressure cooker today. I mean, it wasn't 3 days after harvest and we were eating it and we made phenomenal tacos.
It was delicious.
Yum.
And we have Eric Coggin, who is a guest with us today. And we've got Jebediah Verhalen, who is with us, talking all things rough fish. And we're going to get to all that. But what a great week it's been. And you are not going to believe what is going on when these guys get on a boat with lights in the middle of the night. And we're going to talk Asian carp too, which is crazy. And Chef Lawton's recipe is coming up, plus my recipe for carp. Yes, I'm not kidding. A recipe for carp on Raised in Wisco. Wisco, everything for the outdoors of Wisconsin, and somehow it always ties back to food, probably because it's my favorite dish and I love to eat. It's my favorite pastime. I don't know if it comes right down to it if I actually like the hunting more or the eating more of the hunting.
I like
really
eating
don't.
When I'm hunting.
Ooh, I love eating blind snacks. While I'm hunting. Blind snacks, blind entire meals, shore lunches. You name it, I love it. My name's Joel Clayfish. I get the honor and privilege of hosting Raised in Wisco alongside host Danielle Fairman. And we get to talk about the outdoors of the state of Wisconsin. You know, some people would say this is a job. It is not a job.
It is not
it's
a job.
It's so fun.
It is. I love the show so much. Three years. Coming up on 3 years.
That's crazy.
Oh, just this show, though.
That is absolutely crazy. And for those, and we're keep growing.
High too. Five.
No,
you
five.
Almost had me there. Foot
I
five.
Did.
You almost had me on the high five.
For everybody, Joel and Ellie hate high fives.
Yep. I'm just kind
Big
of against high fives. I'm
I don't
more
like
of a
them.
Handshake or a
don't fist bump me either.
A bro hug kind of guy or but we've all kind of agreed to foot five is okay.
Yeah.
Because it takes a little
great.
More effort.
We took a consensus on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. We are talking today about, and everything turns back to food for us, and when today's topic is carp, so this will be Yum. Very interesting once we get to the food section of the show. We're going to be talking about eating carp, so if you are interested to learn that and you're new to the show, we talk about food every week. We do not talk about how to eat carp every week, so don't worry.
No,
that's not going to be
the
case. Eric Coggin is here, and so is Jeb Verhalen, and we are talking about carp hunting in Wisconsin, which these two guys are literally experts at. Do you have a number, Eric, of carp you've killed in your life? Do you think you could even give us he's got an ear-to-ear smile and a voice for radio.
Gee, I wonder if he likes it.
Hundreds. Thousands.
We'll just say thousands.
Thousands. Okay, what do you do with these thousands? Because they have to go somewhere. You're not allowed to put them in the dumpster, correct?
No.
So what do you do with all these?
We eat
Good
some
question.
Of them. We generally, they end up in fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of times, like a lot of our tournament stuff, when we harvest a lot of them, they'll end up as fertilizer for farmers' fields.
Yeah, that's a fantastic. When the times I've gone carp hunting, and in fact, there was they tried to take all of the carp out of Sinisippi Lake several years ago, and I was back in my TV news reporter days, and I remember covering the story. They put rotenone in Sinisippi Lake, and it killed all the carp off. Oh. And they gave them to all the farmers throughout the area who wanted to fertilize their fields. And I am not joking. We're driving down the road with a cameraman, and there's a farmer out with a manure spreader, and fish were flying out of it. I can't make it up. We called the story Flying Fish. I think it might have even been nominated for something at some point.
Nice.
But the fact is, you know, farmers were using it, and there is an aspect of carp that is actually quite utilized in the culinary field, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's interesting to me. Well, and I've had it.
Speaking of flying carp, I learned before the show, I'm not into carp. I know there's common carp and this pretty much about it, but you were talking about Asian carp.
Yeah.
And how invasive they are, even more than the other ones, the commons and whatever other ones there are.
The Asian silver carp is kind of became a target of ours last year. We ran into them, and anybody that's been down south, they jump out of the water, jump in your boat, hit people, knock people out of boats, kind of destroy the waterways. With them being a plankton eater, they kind of force most the other fish out of the ecosystem. We found them in Wisconsin last fall and been chasing them since then. And about 3 weeks ago, a young man named Mason shot the new silver carp record out of my boat.
Wow. Now,
so how big is the record?
32.5 pounds.
32.5 pounds.
Goodness.
So tell me how that goes.
How it went down is George Van Vagel and I were taking his kids bull fishing one night. We were driving down the Mississippi River, and all of a sudden we watched some fish jump out of the water. We both looked at each other and said, those were silvers.
Oh, man.
And George shot a 26-pounder that night. That was last September. And since then, we've harvested probably a dozen or so. And last Friday night, I shot a 22-pounder.
Wow.
Had a 20-pounder jump in our boat a couple weeks ago.
Jeez.
I've seen the video of this. And, folks, if you have not seen this video, put in Asian carp jumping or Asian carp boats. Search it. You will be blown away. These things are, and it's
dangerous.
Fun
it's
and
super
funny
violent
to watch. However, it's extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Imagine wakeboarding or skiing or just going on a tube and you have your kid back there and all of a sudden these.
Or standing on a boat and you get 20 pounds across the face.
Yeah, 20 pounds. Geez. I mean, you could break in. Somebody could break a neck.
Yeah.
I watched Jeb get one in the face. And then, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah?
20 years ago on the Illinois River, he got it right in the face.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it does not sound pleasant.
It was unpleasant.
Now, do you fish them the same way as you bow fish them the same way as you bow fish standard carp?
So the ones on Pool 11 down by Prairie du Chien that we've been chasing, the water's pretty dirty, and we pretty much shoot at them either in the air or right after they jump out of there.
Wow.
Okay, when they shoot for these fish, they're using bow fishing bows, which have a string attached to the arrow. So they're not just shooting arrows into people's backyards. I feel like we need to clarify that real quick. Because not everybody knows what you're talking about.
Well,
this adds quite an element to it. You're trying to shoot a bow with an arrow, archery, at something mid-flight. This is not a shotgun that's got thousands of pellets hitting a clay pigeon moving away from you or toward you. You are shooting a single arrow at a fish as it flies through the air.
Imagine
that's
goose hunting
crazy.
With a bow and arrow.
Could you? Yes,
please.
Like, no.
I'm in.
I've been
do
it.
It.
I've done it. I've
I
done
will
it.
Do
I've
it.
Done it. That is crazy. Absolutely crazy. You shoot flu arrows, different subject, different show. Tell me what that is like, Eric, when you're shooting at these things flying through the air.
Well, generally, my boat does about 7.5 miles an hour with the kicker.
Cruising.
So you're traveling 7-ish miles an hour, and the vibration from the motor or the change in vibration is what really kind of makes them jump. But we kind of figured out, working with the biologists, giving us some areas and talking to some of the biologists, that these fish kind of lazy up in the trees, kind of like act like a bass at night.
Okay.
So we're driving.
They're sitting around structure.
And so you're driving on the Mississippi River, 7 miles an hour through timber, hitting trees, wrecking props,
And you love it and keep doing it
over and over.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. But talking about when we got a couple on Pool 8 now, right around lacrosse because one of the biologists kind of advertised some spots, and we went out there and chasing them. And there we actually could see them swimming in the water.
Okay.
Which the water was a little clearer there. So
I'm really interested in knowing about this shooting them in midair. I mean, Jeb, what is going on when you're sitting at the back of the boat and you're waiting for a carp to fly out? And as the boat's moving forward, it flies out, it's moving away from you. Not only are you having to pin it right to left, but it's also going away from you at the same time. And your arrow, the second it leaves your bow, starts to drop. How on earth do you ever hit these things?
There's a lot of luck involved in that. I won't lie to you. The first time we started doing this on the Illinois River back, I don't know how long ago it was, probably 20 years now, we actually stood on the back of the boat and drove, and they would jump behind the boat. They started jumping in front, too. It's a little harder because you're going at them. The fish that are kind of up in the air and going away from you, they seem a little slower, but there's a lot of luck and a lot of just kind of, you got to lead it. You almost got to lead it like you're shooting a duck or a goose, but it's different because, like you said, your arrow's heavy and it's tied to a string, and so when you let it go here, that fish is it at its apex or is it already coming down and your arrow goes over, under? It's a lot of luck. Now, I haven't done it this year with Eric on the Mississippi, so these fish might act different than what I've seen before, but he's got it dialed in pretty well. I mean, he's been out there about every weekend for the last 2 months, and he's one of the only people that I know that are doing it on this kind of regular basis, and he's worked at it. He's dialed them in, and he's getting some information for the DNR to help us out, figure out what their pattern is, where they're at, how they can track them, how they can get them out of here. Because like he said earlier, the plankton eating side of what they do, it degrades the fishery
when
for
you
all
take
the rest
out,
of the fish.
Yeah, when you take out the very base of the food pyramid structure for a species, you're messing with everything above it in that structure.
The entire ecosystem
and
of the river gets
plankton
hosed.
Is at the very base of what fish eat. And big fish can't eat smaller fish if the smaller fish don't have food. So how much of this, Eric, is really, first off, I want to know, do you think you're making a dent in these populations? Number two, what are you reporting to the DNR, and what is the information they want that you're giving them that could help us at least keep this problem at bay before so many waterways are decimated?
With us having kind of figured some stuff out and talking to the biologists, I was supposed to go last week with the federal guys who are furloughed right now, not to get into that whole thing, but that kind of wrecked our trip. I was supposed to spend 2 days with them tagging and monitoring the fish, because there's like 7 monitoring stations that they have, and they have a bunch of radio transmitters in some of these fish. And why they do that, and I kind of question it in my mind, is they catch them, they tag them, put a radio transmitter in them, let them go. And then in the wintertime, when they congregate in a big group, when they get like 5 tags together, they send the commercial fishermen in there and they catch the whole group and kill off all their friends.
Wow.
Is basically how.
Not the fishermen, the carp.
The carp. So I was supposed to spend last week with them if they wouldn't have got furloughed to see what they're doing. Because to me, if you catch them, why aren't we killing them? But it kind of makes sense. They do it with pythons and Florida too. So
yeah, and if you know what the patterns are, the habits and the habitat of specific species, you have a better chance of controlling it, because conservation is one of the biggest parts of the outdoors. That's why those of us on this show believe truly in making sure bag limits are followed and following the rules and eating what you kill and harvest and forage. And speaking of it, yep, folks, we're doing it. We are about to hear a couple carp recipes. So if you got the stomach for it, I'm telling you, if you tried it and didn't know what it was, you'd be surprised. Chef Ellie Lawton with her recipe on Raised in Wisco. Thank you. listening to Raised in Wisco. My name is Joel Clayfish. I have the distinct honor of captaining this ship, which I love every minute of it, alongside the co-captain, Danielle Fairman, our chef, Ellie Lawton, the official chef of Raised in Wisco, and contributor, the sommelier pirate, Megan Saladbar Salazar. We're talking with Eric Coggan and Jeb Verhalen about shooting carp off a boat. And before we get into the recipe, I asked him about shooting them with a shotgun. And you cannot do that in Wisconsin yet, but if it goes on the spring hearings for the Conservation Congress, we might be able to do that. Well, I real quick, I'm a go for that. I have no problem whatsoever and cannot see a reason you shouldn't be able to shoot these things with a shotgun. I think you get a lot more of them a lot quicker, and you'd help control some of these populations.
That's why I went and got my six-pack license. If we get that legal, you know, I'll have guide trips every weekend.
All right.
Did you say six-pack license?
State Senator Rob Stafschult, you heard it here on Raised in Wisco. We need some legislation legalizing shotgun shooting carp off the back of a boat. Hey,
it sounds wonderful.
Tenderizes it too right away.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Speaking, for you weird carp recipes.
Yes. So
I am intrigued.
This brings us to our carp recipes of the week. Chef Lawton, what do you got?
Well, actually, I want to kind of turn this over to Eric and Jeb for a minute. I want to know how they prepare it. You guys are the experts. And then I'll tell my recipe. What do you have?
Oh,
Smoked carp.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What do you smoke
delicious.
It with?
Whatever
smoke.
My
whatever
friend says, smoke. I don't know how to smoke it.
He smokes it with whatever his friends smoke it with and give it to him.
Yeah.
I just provide the fish.
You just provide. Hey, that's okay.
Well, that's the most important part. It's hard to smoke fish if we don't have fish.
Smoked is the way I've had it in the past, too. I had a neighbor who was, I believe he was Armenian back in the day when I lived next to him.
You mean he's not Armenian anymore?
He might not be.
He might not be.
We don't know what happens.
I brought some buffalo carp. Or suckers, actually, in a sucker family home, and he was absolutely ecstatic. He took everyone I had and he smoked them, and that meat was extremely white, extremely flaky, very similar to the texture of a cod.
Mm-hmm.
You get to a common carp, it's a little oilier, and when you smoke that common carp, all those oils suck in all of that smoke flavor. It's incredible. Eagle Springs Pub, way back in the day, like 40 years ago, had a carp boat every year, and they brought smoked carp to the table every year, and it was gone within an hour.
I believe it.
Absolutely awesome.
I believe it. But Chef Lawton, your recipe is not about smoking carp, is it?
We're not going to smoke it. We're going to bake it. We're going to dice it. We're going to mix it up and fry it.
Try it. Let's hear it. What do you got?
So we are making carp cakes.
Carp cakes. It's like
very similar to crab cakes.
There's only one letter different.
That's where the inspiration came from. And I'm not allergic to carp. So I can eat all of it I want. I can eat carp all day long if I wanted to.
All right. Well, how do you make carp cakes?
So you're going to bake your fish. Obviously, the head, the tail's off. It's scaled, everything like that, gutted. So you're going to bake the fish about 360 for 35 to 45 minutes till it's done, depending on how big it is. And then you're going to let it cool. You can dice it up, like chop it finely, or you can put it in a food processor. And then you're just going to put in your basic ingredients like you would for a crab cake. You're going to do eggs, Worcestershire sauce, salt, pepper, fresh dill, some lemon juice. I did a scoop of cherry preserves in this.
Ooh,
little sweetness, preserves. Which is really good. Yeah, you doing okay, Danielle?
No.
you haven't sold.
No.
No. He's not doing it for me.
And Brett. Oh,
last week, I'm still stuck on last week's.
Okay, well, get over it. We're doing carp now. And breadcrumbs. And then you're just going to form it. You can use like a ice cream scoop. Form it and put it in a pan with some hot oil and fry it just like a crab cake. Same thing. And then top it with a caper aioli. So mayo, capers, lemon juice, a little salt, a little pepper. You can throw some cayenne in there. Or you can put hollandaise sauce over it.
Ooh, everything
it's
is great
so
with
good.
Hollandaise sauce on it.
And then put it on top of some shredded purple cabbage. It's fantastic.
Huh.
Danielle, you're going to eat it and love it.
I'll try. You know I'll try anything.
Yes, I know.
I
Culinary
won't.
Corners.
Yeah. Well,
Joel, what's your recipe?
Well, I was just going to say, I went carp fishing a while ago for the old television show I did, Kill It, Clean It, Cook It. we shot some carp and we took them to some of the little old ladies at the Jewish American Center in Milwaukee, and they minced it and they made it and they canned it in a jellied broth, which is called gefilte fish.
It is
a Jewish cuisine, and I have to tell you, it's absolutely delicious. It almost tastes like a mild fish-flavored Salisbury steak of the sea.
That doesn't actually sound that great.
Well,
but I'd eat it.
I'm telling you, it's great. I don't know if it's as good as smoked carp, but I want to say one thing that we always do. Carp have a mud line in them. So if you're not familiar with a rough fish have a mud line. That is where their digestive system it's part of their digestive system. When you fillet them, you have to fillet above that mud line, and you will get any of that fishy taste out of it. And you can just fillet off that top part, which is right under the back, and you can fry that. And I am telling you, in Europe, it is a delicacy, but if you fillet above the mud line, you're going to have a real nice white fish that tastes very similar to me to pollock. And if you've had that, if you go to Wisconsin Fish Fries in any amount, you've eaten pollock before. It's got a very similar flakiness, a similar consistency to it. And I think it's delicious. Don't knock it until you try it. And you know what? If you take a little bite of it and you don't like it, at least you tried it. But I guarantee you somebody at your event will like it. I think the carp cakes sound fantastic. And of course, yeah. Now, in the day and age when everybody's got a smoker, throw some cherry wood pellets in the smoker, baste that in some soy sauce, maybe a little right wing sauce, buffalo sauce, and let it smoke. Try the carp. And if you want to know how to make it, get on Facebook, sign up for Raised in Wisco. Tell us what you think and learn the recipes. Folks, we love having you along on the show. Hear us on all civic media stations throughout Wisconsin. Saturdays at 11. We'll see you next week on Raised in Wisco.